spoke yesterday about the importance of having the utmost of honesty and integrity in our interactions with others. And one very important halacha that we need to be aware of, which is often misunderstood, is what the Gemara refers to as Dina de Malchusa Dina. So this is a concept, this is a principle that is mentioned in Meseches Baba Kama, Meseches Baba Basra, Meseches Gittin, Meseches Nedarim. The Gemara has it in many different contexts, and it is something that is difficult to really get a handle on exactly what the parameters are. But let's just make a few points regarding that. When we have in Parsha Shoftim about the Parshas HaMelech, Sam Tasim Alech HaMelech, we have an obligation to put a king who is going to have sovereignty over our people. So the Torah says there, Lishmar is called Divrei HaTorah Zos. The point of having a Melech is that we should help ourselves and encourage ourselves to follow all the laws of the Torah. Seemingly, if we have our own king, he will steer us in that direction. And, says the Pasuk, Es HaChukim HaEle La'asosam. And he will get us to keep the chukim as well, the laws as well. Now, what exactly does that mean? The Medrash says, Es HaChukim HaEle is referring to not the laws of the Torah, but the laws outside of the Torah, which are the laws of the land. All of the assumed laws that any given country or any given community takes upon themselves. The Rambam writes, what exactly does it mean when we say Dina de Malchusa Dina? It means any time a Melech wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. Sometimes nowadays we have a Melech who can get up and tweet whatever he wants, and that means that we're bound by whatever the person says just because they woke up in a certain mood that day. Is that really what it means? So the Rambam says no. What it means is Melech shalakach chatzer osade shel echad mibnei hamadina. Let's say you have a king who decides one day, I'm stealing your property. He decides you have to move out of your house because I want it. Or for whatever reason, he says, but it's derech hametz. It's not because the community needs to build a highway here. It's not because the community feels this is better used in a different way and therefore we pay you to move somewhere else. But it's completely derech hametz. It's illegitimate in the way it was taken away. Shelo kedin, says the Rambam, hareza gazlan. That king is a gazlan. That's not something that we have to follow the order of the land just because the king decided one day, woke up on the wrong side of the bed and tells us whatever he thinks is on his mind. We're not bound by that. What it means, dina de machusa dina, is when we have reasonable laws that are made by a body of Congress or a body of a government that all think that this makes sense for the betterment of the community, that is where we have the obligation to follow it. But where it's just somebody on his own decides something that's totally irrational, that's unacceptable, that's something, the Rambam writes, we don't have an obligation to follow. The Achronim discuss whether or not this idea of Dina de Malchusa Dina is a Din de Araisa, or is it only a Din de Rabbanan that was instituted later, and the overwhelming opinion of the Achronim is that this is a Din de Araisa. This is something that we have to follow mid Araisa. The Torah expects us to follow not only the Torah law, but also the Dina de Malchusa Dina as well. Now, the Rishonim discuss what exactly is the reason for this halacha? Why are we bound by the laws of the land? Why are we governed by whatever the understandings of this community happen to be? So the Rashbam writes as follows, and he says, Kol hamisim v'harnonius, all of the taxes that are put upon a community, umin hagos, and all of the communal laws, shel mishpatei melachim, that were put together by whoever governs this town, sheregilim lahanig b'malchusam, meaning they haven't singled our community out and said the Jewish community has to pay this amount of money, but this is something that they said for everybody. They said all residents of this town have to pay a certain tax every year for the public schools, for the libraries, for everything else. All of those laws, dinohu, says the Rashbam, we are bound by those laws. Shekol b'nei ha-malchus, because anybody who chooses to live in this community that is under the sovereignty of a certain leader, of a certain ruler, Mekablim aleha mirtzonam chukei hamelech u'mishpatav. By signing up to live in this place means you have accepted upon yourself that I want to follow and I intend to be a part of the community and do everything that is understood is going to be done in this community. And therefore, says the Rashbam, Hilkach, therefore, din gamaru. Therefore, it is totally binding. It is something you are obligated to keep because you signed up for that. If you move to this community, it means that's what you signed up to. This Rashbam is quoted by other Rishonim, and the Truma Sadeshin adds, and he says, Adaita dahachi, it is with this understanding, Anu kovim dira tachteim. You chose to live in the five towns, well, you are bound by X, Y, and Z. You didn't want to have these laws, you could have moved somewhere else. But from the fact that you chose to move here, it means our government that governs over the laws of this part of the land is going to tell you how you have to live, like the Truma Sadeshin writes, with that understanding, we chose to live in this community. And that is the first opinion of the Rishonim as to why Dina de Malchusa Dina is binding. Why must we follow all the laws of the land? Why is that important? Why are we obligated to do so? Because we have signed up for that. If we chose to live in this community, it means we took upon ourselves to take the entire package, which means not just the wonderful bounty of living in a community that's as beautiful as this, but it means also you have to be taxed and everything else that comes along with living in this community. There are other Rishonim who say quite a similar approach, but a drop different, and they say as follows. The Rashba and the Ran write, because since the whole land belongs to the Melech, which is not so applicable today, we don't really assume that the President of the United States owns the land. So since he owns the land, therefore you're bound by his law. So let's say, I own my house. Somebody who comes into my house is bound by the law of the rules of my house. Why? Because he's in my property. It's my home. So the other Rishonim say that's the same thing. If you chose to live in this community, it means the governor owns the land and he has the right to tell you, you don't like it, get out of my house. Well, that's not really the understanding that we have today. We don't understand that the governor of New York has sovereignty over the land, that it all belongs to him and we have to follow his rules because it's like it's his home. So that understanding of the Rishonim is a little bit questionable whether or not that's really the scenario, the circumstance that we have today. But that is a slightly different approach. And third, Rabbeinu Yonah, one of the other great Rishonim, writes, the reason why we are bound by Dina de Machusa Dina is because it's a very limited halacha. And he writes that the only time this halacha is binding is like the halacha of Hefker Bezdin Hefker. The same way a Bezdin can get up and say, we are unhappy with the way this person is acting, and therefore we can take away his money, we can take away his field, we can do something that will diminish from his property. So too, the ruler of the land has a right to say, we decided this is what we need, and therefore we can take away this amount of tax from your paycheck, we can take away this amount from your property, but they don't have a right to do anything outside of that. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah writes. It's all based on the principle of Hefker Bezdin Hefker. Whatever the reason is for this halacha, we assume this halacha is binding. It's quoted in Shulchan Aruch that we must follow all the laws of the land, Dina de Machusa Dina. However, what is not clear is this only limited to monetary laws, Dina Mamonis? Because after all, every example that the Gemara and the Rishonim give of Dina de Machusa Dina is when we are taxed, when the Melech tells us you have to give this amount or that amount of money or property away to the country. What about when we're talking about something that is outside of monetary matters? For example, if you have a societal or a communal law, are we bound by that as well? For a very common example, let's say you have certain regulations on how you're allowed to build a home, or certain regulations on what has to be installed into a home, or zoning laws. Certain communities take upon themselves certain understandings that the zoning has to be X, Y, or Z. Traffic signals. The Torah doesn't say you have to stop at a red light. That is the Dina de Machusa. The law of the land says you have to stop at a traffic light. But what does that mean, you have to stop at it? Are we bound by that because that is also a part of Dina de Malchusa, even though it's outside of monetary matters? Do we ever find a precedent in halacha that we are bound by matters outside of monetary laws because of the Dina de Malchusa alone? This is a very important question. So Rav Moshe Feinstein writes in a tshuva that there were those who asked him about cheating on state tests. And they asked Rav Moshe Feinstein, let's say you take a certain test and it's a very important test. So, or even if it's not an important test, they asked Rav Moshe Feinstein, well, it's not a test that we need to take for ourselves, it's something that we need to take for government regulations, for state regulations. Are we allowed to cheat on the test or not? So Rav Moshe says, Dina de Malchusa expects that you're going to be honest in the way you take a test, and therefore, even though the Torah didn't tell you to take the test, but since the state requires that you have to take this exam, it's also understood that you're going to follow the rules of the exam, and you certainly are not allowed to cheat. Rav Moshe writes, not only is that a reason why one is not allowed to be dishonest in taking a test, but he says, number two, it would be outright geneva. It would be outright stealing if you ultimately get a job because you cheated on your actuarial exams or your law school bar or whatever it might be. You cheated in some way and you weren't honest in the way you took the test. Says Rav Moshe, every subsequent day that you make money on your job as a result of the cheating that you did is stolen money, because maybe somebody else could have gotten the job who did better without cheating. And therefore, Rav Moshe says, outside of the Dina de Machusa issue, there's also the issue of the cheating aspect leads to geneva, because you got the job over somebody else who deserved it, and therefore, he writes, one has to be very careful. But what you see from Rav Moshe is that Dina de Machusa Dina extends further outside of Dina Mamonis as well. Here, we're talking about ethics. We're not talking about stealing money from somebody. We're talking about whether or not you have to be honest on a state or a federal exam that you need to take. And even there, Rav Moshe writes, Dina de Machusa Dina is something that one needs to be very careful about. Already in the 1300s, there was a fascinating shaila that was raised, the Tashbetz. Tashbetz was one of the great Rishonim in Spain who took over the position of the Rivash. So the Rivash passes away. They give over the position to the Tashbetz, and the Tashbetz is unsure about whether or not he's allowed to accept the position. Why? Says the Tashbetz, there was a new law that was given over in that community, and the law was, from the local government, that anybody who wants to take a position of leadership, even in the Jewish community or in the Christian community, any community, the law was that they have to have the approval by the local government officials. And therefore the Tashbetz said, I never went through the system and I never met with them, I never had the interview to decide whether or not I'm worthy of the position. So it's true that everybody in the community feels I'm the most worthy for the job and I'll be the best rabbi and I'll know how to paskin the shaylos better than anyone else, but after all, I don't have the government approval, and that is the law. So he was wondering whether or not he's allowed to take the position, or perhaps he has to go through the process and become approved, and if he doesn't become approved, maybe they'll have to go look for someone else. So the Tashbetz writes two reasons why he thinks that he doesn't have to listen to the local law. Number one, he says, because this was not something that was agreed upon by the local government. He says the only time we have to follow the law is when it's Dina de Malchusa, when we have a body of government who all decides together that this makes sense for the Chukei HaMedina, in order for a country to run smoothly, these are the laws we're going to decide. That's when one has to abide by the laws. But when the Melech just makes a rule that's only for his own self-hubris, for his own self-pride, he says, anybody who wants a position has to come meet with me. Why am I meeting with you? Not because you have an understanding of the position that's open, not because you have an understanding of the person who's applying for it. Therefore, writes the Tashbetz, just because the Melech decided on his own, for his own self-pride, for his own self-gratification, that's not something I'm obligated to be bound by when it's just for the king himself's own arrogance. And therefore, he writes, that's reason number one why I don't have to listen to the law. Number two, he says, when you have a dina de malchusa that goes against, that's contrary to the dina ha-Torah, how can we listen to that? So he writes, what's going to happen? The king is not going to approve of me as the rabbi. Then they're going to get somebody who knows nothing about the halacha to be the rabbi. What's going to happen? The community is going to go astray. That's not going to work. There's no way the Torah would be happy about that. And therefore, writes the Tashbetz, one wouldn't have to listen to the dina de malchusa in a case like that. Now that, and is an extremely questionable and controversial issue that the Tashbetz raises. Is that really true? Nowadays, we have such intricate laws in the way we practice life today, much more complicated than it used to be. And we're building houses, and we have office buildings, and we have mortgages, and we have banks, and we have so many different things that never existed. And the question is, very often, the state or federal law goes against, it's contrary to what the halacha would say we have to do. And the question is it true that you're supposed to totally disregard the state or federal law when the halacha dictates otherwise? Is that really true or not? Now, that's not a simple question at all. The Shach writes in Choshen Mishpat, absolutely, the halacha is the halacha. Nothing else will ever take the place of the halacha. And even if you're going against a state or federal law, you have to follow the halacha regardless. This is a highly contentious Shach, and that is not agreed upon by many other Achronim. The Chazon Ish takes major issue with that Shach, and he thinks that it's not correct at all. And in fact, it's not really clear where we draw the line. When do we say the halacha is the halacha, and when do we say that state law will override the halacha, and we will not listen to what the halacha says in this particular case? Now, that's a very important question, because in Shulchan Aruch we find different psukim in different places that seem to indicate in both different directions. For example, the Rashba, as quoted in Shulchan Aruch, talks about the following case. A couple got married, and the woman brought a certain amount of money into the marriage, let's say $10,000, $20,000, and now the woman died very unexpectedly, very young, and they were only married a year, let's say, and the Rashba says that the father of the girl comes to the husband and he says, look, she came in with $20,000, but she wasn't even invested in the marriage. She died within the first year. It's not fair that you get to keep the money. Our family should be able to keep the money. The whole reason why she came into the marriage with all that money was that someday you should send your kids to college and you should be able to buy a house. Why should you get the money? It doesn't make sense. Now he says, what do you mean? The Torah says, "Habal yorish es ishto." Husband has a right to take the money that his wife brought into the marriage. So how can you tell me that I'm supposed to give it back to you? After all, that is not the law. But the question is, the law of the land is that the family gets to take it back, the husband does not. So that was the major issue that was raised by the Rashba. Do we listen to the law of the land in that case? Or do you say, no, the Torah and the Gemara state very clearly that "Habal yorish es ishto," the husband has the right to take anything that his wife left over after she is deceased. And therefore, he has a right to take it, even though they were only married a very short time, and it doesn't really make sense that he gets it. So that was a major issue, and the Rama paskins one way with regard to that. In other issues, he paskins a different way, and it's very unclear. But the truth is, if you look through Shulchan Aruch, the Rama says in a number of places that we follow the Dina de Malchusa even when it goes against the the psak of the Torah. Even when the Torah tells us one halacha, but if the Dina de Malchusa assumes otherwise, we follow the Dina de Malchusa. We don't have enough time to go into it. It's time for Mincha already, but this is a very important issue because so often we have people who, let's say, will be summoned to a Din Torah, and the question is, how do we figure out how to paskin the Shaila? If you look strictly in the Shulchan Aruch, that might not be good enough because the Shulchan Aruch might say one thing and the local or federal or state law might be very different than what the Shulchan Aruch says. And the question is, how do we jive all of the systems together to figure out how today we can paskin Shaila and Choshen Mishpat? Do we have to take everything into account, even that which is outside of the confines or sometimes opposing to the view of the halacha? Or should we assume that Dina de Machusa Dina only applies when we have something that is not discussed in halacha? But when we have something that is discussed explicitly in halacha, perhaps we should only follow what the Shulchan Aruch himself says, and we don't follow the local or the federal state law. Bottom line is, when it's not so complicated, we certainly have an obligation to follow all of the Dina de Machusa, whatever is expected of us. By signing up to live in this part of the world, this part of the country, it means we've signed up not only to gain the benefits of the land, but also to be obligated by the restrictions of the land, and to pay the taxes, and to do everything that is expected of any upstanding citizen who happens to live in this part of the world.